Okay, there's a sefer, Darosh Darash Yosef. Darosh Darash Yosef. It's a collection of some of the Shurim and Chumash that Rav Sal Lovechik gave in the 1970s, I believe, and it was compiled and written up by Rabbi Avishai David. Rav David is the Rosh Hashiva of Torah Shraga, and in particular, Parshas Toldos has a number of very, very beautiful ideas, and I wanted to share with you one of them. One of them, which I think has a very, very practical lesson in terms of our outlook in growth and Avodas Hashem. So right at the beginning of the Parsha, this week's Parsha, Vayhi Yitzchak ben Arboim Shana b'kach tovus Rivka bas b'suel ha'arami b'padan aram achos lovan ha'arami lo lisha. After we initially introduce, again, Yitzchak as the son of Abraham, as the first pasuk does, we backtrack in terms of Rivka's background as well. Yitzchak is 40 years old. At the time that he takes Rivka, Rivka was much younger, it seems. Rivka is now described at this juncture, marrying Yitzchak as the daughter of Besuel from Padan Aram and the sister of Lavan Harami. So the question is, we know who Rivka is. We just devoted pretty much the entire Parshas Chayisara that we read yesterday to finding Rivka, identifying her, and knowing that she's the one for Yitzchak. So why is it that right at the beginning of the Parsha, we need to go through her whole Yichus? Once again, not much time, not many psukim have passed since we met her for the first time with the whole Mishpacha. So that's a question the Rav asked. So he explained that there's something very important over here, and it's alluded to in the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, when the Torah describes the Jewish people leaving Eretz Mitzrayim. The pasuk says, "Vayomer Anochi Hakel Elokei Avicha Al Tira Mirdam Mitzrayim Ki L'Goy Gadol Asim Chasham." It's a prophecy about Klal Yisrael leaving Mitzrayim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates to Yaakov as he's going down to see Yosef. It's in Perek Mem Vav, Pasuk Gimel, Sefer Bereishis, and Hashem says, "Don't worry, Yaakov, you'll be okay. I know you're scared of leaving Eretz Yisrael, scared of going to the land of Tum and Mitzrayim, but I will make your children great nation there." Right? So that ultimately, by the time they leave, they will be the fulfillment of this nevuah. Now, what does the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel add? It means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make us into a great nation there in Mitzrayim. That's what he adds. It's a little bit strange, because it doesn't seem to do much more than what it is the Torah is telling us, right? The lashon of the pasuk is ki l'goy gadol asim chasham. So, what has been added? What has been added? Moreover, the Rav also points out that the Haggadah learns from the pasuk v'hisham l'goy gadol malam yishar Yisrael mitzuyon misham, that the Jews were distinguished and distinctive when they were in Mitzrayim, and that's the commentary on v'hisham l'goy gadol. But Hisham L'Goy Gadol means that they were different. They were distinct. Very, very interesting. So what's the Vort? The Vort is that it was Dafka in Mitzrayim and only in Mitzrayim that Klal Yisrael could reach this level of being the Goy Gadol, the unique Goy Gadol that's described in the Haggadah, even if the same multiplication of the members of the population of Klal Yisrael, Paru v'Yishutzu mode, had it happened in Eretz Canaan, the same miracles of childbirth would have occurred earlier. It would not have achieved a fulfillment of the prophecy of Vahisham L'Goy Gadol, or as HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, T'Yakov Avinu Ki L'Goy Gadol Asim Chasham. But why was it that Dafka in Egypt, right? A Goy Gadol, a unique nation, they got the Torah, they had their own rules, they had their own mitzvos, And in terms of quantity, right? Just a lot of people. So why did it have to be in Egypt Dafka? So the pshat is because there were unique qualities that the Gemara Nivama says that if you meet someone who claims to be a Jew and he does not have the midos that are essential to the Jewish people, Rachmanim, Baishanim, and Gomel Chasadim, you need to be suspect that he might not have ancestors who stood by our Sinai. Rachmanim, merciful, Baishanim, they're modest, they're bashful, they have shame at the right in the right context, and they're gomel chatzodim. But in order for Klal Yisrael to cultivate those midos, for those midos to really be ingrained in our persona, in our spiritual DNA, we had to be thrust into, as Rabbi David records it, the vortex of power, might, and brutal force, and experience the antithesis of our ethos. Only through exposure to these adverse character traits could we achieve our true essence as a people. Right? Sometimes you need to be in an environment which is so different from who you are and what defines you to be able to pull out those qualities and make them shine. Because if you're always in a static set of surroundings, so there's nothing that's pushing you to maximize. There's no nisayon that pushes you to show your true colors. You just sort of blend in with everyone who's around you, right? And you need to be exposed to the opposite in order to feel the need to let out what's deep inside be exposed. And finally, the Rav quotes one more pasuk in Shir Shirim, "Kishoshana ben Achochim, Kain Rayasi ben Abanos." Shlomo HaMelech describes Klal Yisrael as a rose among the thorns, A rose, a soft-petaled flower, flourishes specifically in an environment of thorns. It's a pain and suffering that confers upon the rose its beauty, and that is a mashal for Klal Yisrael. Their greatness was dafka a function of the suffering in Mitzrayim, and the recognition that its moral heritage was an entirely different nature than those who surrounded them when they were in Mitzrayim. It reminded me of two incidents. One, a story that I heard from a former Talmud, former guy in the Shir, and one which I think myself and some of my chaverim experienced when we were in the same stage of life that you guys are in right now. The first was a Talmud where I would say it was in my Shir. Maybe I don't know if it was the first year I gave Shir, maybe the second year I gave Shir. It goes back about seven or eight years ago, and he transferred to YU from Brandeis for various reasons. He was doing well in Brandeis, but he was in a right to Talmud. But at whatever point he felt the right move was to come to YU, he did so. And after a couple months in YU, he felt very, very troubled. And he felt like he was hitting a slump in his Avodas Hashem. And he had the awareness to reflect and introspect and try to identify what was causing that. And he was able to describe it to me. I remember, like yesterday, we were sitting in the cafe, and he told me when he was in Brandeis, so he was, I guess you could say, one of the firmest guys there. Amongst the Orthodox community, his background permitted him to be, you know, the most observant, but not just the most observant. Because he was so enthusiastic about his Yiddishkeit, especially in contrast to everyone else who was there, he was able to be the gabbai, and he was the one saying the divrei Torah the meal, and he was helping out in the kosher cafeteria, and the role that he took on really allowed him to shine, partly because he brought unique qualities and experiences and excitement and exuberance to the life on campus, the Jewish life on campus, that he immediately became a role model. He immediately became someone who was so easy for other people to look to. And he basically said, you know, like, I can recognize that I'm in the spotlight. I have an opportunity to step up because the people around me, they don't have that. They just don't have that. He wasn't doing it in a condescending way, but he realized that the people around him were different, and it was up to him to excel and to lead, and he was called upon for that because no one else was going to do it. The people in his environment weren't interested. So it's almost like what the Rav is describing. Klal Yisrael had to be in Mitzrayim where there was a push, where like, you know, someone has to, when you begin a race, a swimming race, you push off the wall of the side of the pool to get that boost. You push off your environment with a recognition that this is so not me. I want to be someone else, and I can excel because I realize that the true me is so different than my surroundings. And that's a very strong motivating force. But then he got to YU, and as he put it, he's like, you know, I'm not so special. Everybody goes to Minyan. Everybody eats kosher. Everybody keeps Shabbos. It wasn't special anymore. And he felt like it was such a letdown in his motivation because there wasn't anything pushing him anymore because he just sort of, you know, got swallowed up into the crowd and he was just like everybody else. And upon reflection, we can look at that and say, okay, you know, the message of the Rav of Klal Yisrael going to Mitzrayim and the message of Rivka, how the Rav ultimately explains that it was Rivka's background, that there needs to be an emphasis in the beginning of the Parsha on who her father was and who her brother was and where she came from, because that was actually something which propelled her to become one of the Emos. And that we can thrive sometimes when we're put in that Nisayon. We shouldn't ask to be put in that Nisayon, but we can sometimes thrive from that Nisayon given our surroundings. And we may find ourselves in an office where the moral standards are very low. The way that people conduct themselves and speak, the integrity which with they conduct their affairs is questionable. And we should propel ourselves off of that mitzias, and by recognizing, wait a second, this is not me. I need to step. I need to distinguish myself. I need to be mitzuyonim sham, like Chazal described the Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim. But unfortunately, this Talmud, he couldn't pull it off. He couldn't keep it going. He hit that slump because instead of taking that momentum, hit all of his Yiddishkeit had been propelled by it instead of just lighting the fire with that catalyst. And it's an important lesson. We can let it inspire us, but it can't be just being different and just being at the top cannot be the only motivating factor in our Yiddishkeit. On the flip side of things, when I was in college, so you know, I guess we're back to where we were 20 years ago, up until this winter, up until this intercession. It was normal, as you know, for lots and lots of guys to come back to their yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael after being there for Shana Aleph, Shana Bet, starting YU for the first semester in January when they have a couple weeks off to go back to their yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael and visit there, and learn there. But that wasn't always the case for various reasons. Financially, it wasn't always so simple, and practically, it wasn't so simple. So in my day, when I was in college, many, many guys visited other yeshivas in America where we had friends. And spent a week or two there while YU was off, and the other yeshivas were still in session because our Bein Hazmanim don't exactly line up. And I went to visit another yeshiva and learned there for about a week and a half, where some of my friends had been studying. And I remember, I don't know if I recognized this at the time, but I think I did. But it became even more apparent when people would ask me why I stayed in YU. Many of the people in my chevra left YU. Many of them went to other yeshivas, they went to the Mir, but I stayed here. I love YU, but there was one particular incident in that week when I was at another yeshiva that definitely was a major contributing force into appreciating how special our yeshiva is. Obviously, every yeshiva has what to offer, every yeshiva has things that are special, but YU has some very unique characteristics. And what I saw in that yeshiva was that after Shacharis, I don't know, maybe it was 7:30, 7:45 in the morning, something like that. And then after Shacharis, everybody made their way to the dining room. And when we got to the dining room, there were, you know, like those plastic tubes with like seven or eight different types of cereal, Fruit Loops and Corn Flakes and Cheerios and Frosted Flakes and so forth. Then there was hot cereal. There was choice of French toasts and pancakes. There was hard-boiled eggs, there were scrambled eggs, and orange juice and hot chocolate and everything. And it was a feast. It was much a feast. And lots of guys, you know, by the time they were done eating, 45 minutes later, would stroll their way back to the Beis Medrash for morning Seder. And I just, you know, that was a vacation week for me. But I said to myself, you know, it was so jarring because breakfast in YU, forget about the options, but you know, like 45 minutes of just like chill during breakfast doesn't exist. You know, I was coming from YU under the pressure of our schedule. You know, sometimes you're lucky if you can throw down a granola bar and a cup of coffee, and you know, between the rush of davening, learning, and making to Seder on time, it's a big challenge. And you're under pressure, and there isn't enough time. And I obviously there's a healthy medium. You should eat slowly and be safe and be smart, but But I realized that one of the tremendous advantages that everyone should realize in yeshiva is that we're forced, because of our double schedule, to make the absolute most of every second we have and to see it as being invaluable. And most of that nafka mina is to appreciate that there's leisure time and there's relaxation time and there's downtime and there's outlet time, but it's got to be done. God, it's got to be done in proportion, and it's got to be in a way where we're not usurping critical time of productivity, whether it be in learning, whether it be in our studies, in our classes, but to know what we really need in terms of relaxation time, to be honest about it and not let it get out of hand. But it took me the experience in a different yeshiva where that wasn't the culture to be able to push off of that. Wahavdil, not like Rivka's background, but we do need to look at ourselves as often as possible when we're surrounded by people who are not exactly the same as us, that instead of the dangerous being swallowed up, the peer pressure or the influence of that which is our environment, to adraba, use that as a means to contrast our own essence with those surroundings and realize how important it is to use that as a way to propel ourselves away, refocus and strengthen our commitment to what makes us unique, what makes Klal Yisrael unique, and even in our own personal level, what makes us most productive, so that we can be everything that we want to be and we have the potential to be. Have a great night, Rabosai. See you tomorrow, Mitzvah Shem, 9:15.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.